From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when Google conducted a study to address wage equity among women and members of minority groups in the company, as it has done for several years now. And their 2018 study found something that company leaders did not expect, as summarized in this headline from CNBC. Google found it was underpaying more men than women for similar jobs. Well, it turns out that some male software engineers at the lower levels were scheduled to make less than women for doing the same work in 2019. That set off a wave of comments, many from angry men who claim that this is what happens when you try to overcorrect. Men get victimized. Well, Google moved quickly to correct the inequity, as Wired reported online. So it turns out that no, men at Google were not paid less for the same work, and that prompted critics to ask, why does a company like Google react so quickly when they discover that men are scheduled to be paid less, but you rarely hear about companies doing the same when women are scheduled to be paid less for the same work? Men are paid more than women for the same work in this country, but not by much, and that gap has been shrinking, approaching parity in recent years. But the wider gender pay gap does still exist, although defenders of the pay gap, like psychologist Jordan Peterson, say it's because women tend to prefer careers that pay less, and they don't advocate for raises or promotions as well as men do. Attorney Susan Hennessy responded to all of this with a tweet that went viral. She wrote, quote, "Are you a man looking to empower a woman in honor of International Women's Day? Well, go tell a female colleague exactly how much money you make. Knowledge really is power, and cultures of secrecy around compensation still harm women," end quote. On Connections, we regularly host conversations about the rights of workers, pay equity, strategies, and the law. This hour, Google has set us up for a conversation that goes far beyond Silicon Valley, and our guests in studio include Elizabeth Cordello, chair of the employment law practice at Polano & Farrow. Beth, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is Melanie Wolk, a partner at Trivette Cristo. Melanie, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Sharon Stiller is a partner and director of the employment law practice at Abrams, Fensterman, Fensterman, Eisman, Formato, Ferrer, Wolf, and Carone.
Well done, Evan.
That's a lot of names.
I'm just
going to go with Abrams, Fensterman for the rest of the hour, if you don't mind. Welcome back to the program. I want to just start by asking all of you just to kind of respond to the Google story itself. I mean, that's a story that got a lot of different headlines in a lot of different directions, from the New York Times to CNBC to a lot of blogs to men's rights activists who said, I knew it. I knew this is what's going to happen. Men are going to get the short end of the stick. What's your first take on the Google story, Beth?
Well, my first take is it's no surprise that it made headlines, because oftentimes you don't see that. But what Google, and I'm sure we'll get more into this during the hour, Google even admitted in its own report that there was a blind spot and that it was surprising. And in a company that's overwhelmingly male in its workforce, in the position that is overwhelmingly male, I'm surprised that they just sidestepped the blind spot, didn't dig deeper, and went to remedy the situation.
Okay. Melanie, thoughts?
I think what we're missing here is this is just a small piece of the big puzzle in which they did investigations on, mm-hmm. and we haven't heard anything else. So I find it very interesting. It's either a PR nightmare or the most brilliant PR stunt ever to just release this one piece of what their investigation found and nothing else.
Hmm. So you're very curious to see what else is in there.
Very curious.
Okay. And to be clear, in terms of how this happened, according to Wired and others who have read the small portion that has been released, as Melanie points out, there is some discretion at Google for managers to award essentially what looked to me like bonuses or additional pay. And more often than not, those additional awards were going to women than men. Sharon, some thoughts on the Google story.
So, again, I'm not surprised at it at all. But and of course, it's obviously going to get coverage because it's Google, but there have been so many efforts throughout the nation to deal with salary-related issues. Many states are passing laws dealing with pay equity. Many states, like New York, are passing laws permitting people to discuss their salary. So there's a lot more focus on it than there ever was before.
Did Google do the right thing in acting quickly to say, hey, we found this inequity, we're going to remedy it for 2019?
Well, that's hard to answer because we don't have the information, all the information, as Melanie said. So we don't know. They paid $10 million, but we don't know who the $10 million
right.
went to. So give me more information and I can answer your question better.
Okay. Agree with that, Melanie?
Yeah. I think it's interesting when we see they pay almost $10 million to slightly over 10,000 people. That is almost, if you just take it, divide it even equally, it's almost $1 million a person. And I seriously doubt that the group we're talking about with the software individuals were making in the $1 million ranges where they needed that much difference. So something isn't quite adding up here in a company that's looking at 69% of their employees are men.
Okay. Beth, do you think from what we know, did Google do the right thing?
Well, on its face, it would appear that they did the right thing for this reason. Companies aren't required to take a look at their own compensation and review whether they're paying equally based on gender, race, or what have you. So it's commendable that they did it. But on the other hand, are they doing it because they're the subject of these lawsuits and scrutiny and the Department of Labor investigation? And then, you know, to pay as quickly as they did, I hope it was well-intentioned, but it's really hard to say. Because as the others have said, there's just not enough information out there. So again, on its face, it seems commendable, but we don't have all the information. We don't know if this was a PR move of sorts or what was going on.
Well, let me go. Oh, go ahead.
And in many respects, they have to do some self-examination because they have pay equity, gender discrimination suits going on. And in fact, some of the reports suggest that what we're hearing about there being pay equity that was negative to men was directly contrary to what the experts who were also looking at their data for litigation purposes found. So what's the truth?
Okay, so the Google story, I think our guests have laid out that until we get the full picture, it's hard to fully evaluate what's going on at Google and did they do the right thing. I think it is interesting to hear the backlash on both sides, and I want to ask all three of our guests to kind of weigh in on this. So, Sharon, on the one side, you had the Dave Rubens and the men's rights people saying, "Ah, see, you've overcorrected, and now men are going to get discriminated again." I'm not trying to laugh. I'm just saying that that's what some of the response is. Also, you have some of the response essentially in the direction of, okay, Google reacts immediately as if it's a crisis when men are paid less. Why aren't companies more attuned to when women are paid less? Are either of those sort of two different directions of response more in line with where your response would be on this story?
I just think it's much more complicated than that. So many years ago, we had a lot of litigation and viewing about comparable worth. What are various jobs worth? And then we looked more at pay equity, but it really is complicated. You have somebody who comes in at a lower salary level because they've been out of the workforce raising kids, or somebody who comes in at a lower wage level because they've historically been paid less. How do you deal with that issue? Or it's the concept is that you need to be fair, and that's where I come from. Yeah, you absolutely need to be fair, and you cannot be differentiating between people based on their gender or any other protected category. That's not fair. But how you analyze it in an individual situation becomes a lot more complicated. We all know that there are traditionally gender-based jobs, construction versus being a nanny. And they pay differently. How do you even that out? How do you make it more equitable?
Okay. Melanie, is this a case where the men's rights folks are right? Are the men about to face an imbalance here? Or, on the other end of this, is this a case where a company is overly sensitive to men getting paid less, and do we need to see more of this on behalf of women?
That is so hard to answer. I think there's a possibility in any job that any one sex can be paid appropriately or inappropriately. You know, when you're looking at this in any career, in any business, in any section of a business, there are different milestones, there are different goals, there are different ways to reach those. And just because you have two employees, one's a male and one's a female, and have a similar background, that doesn't mean they bring the same thing to the table. That doesn't mean they reach their goals or reach the business's goals in the same way. And how a business decides to reward that becomes very questionable and very hard, in which it can really start talking about, equity and equality, which are two different things. And I think it's very hard for businesses to do this because not all humans are created equal, be it male, female, two females, two males. Everybody brings something a little different to the table. And when we looked at Google, the reason why the women were paid more wasn't based on the base salary. It was based on managerial discretionary bonuses. Now, Google's evened this out, they say. But what if it shouldn't have been? What if the women were actually bringing something different to the table that that department needed and had a better value to it than what the men were? For whatever reason. And I think this is where we get really easily stuck into a corner between male, female, right, wrong, equality, equity. And it's a very hard answer. There is no black and white answer, but it has to be evaluated. And I think if Google deserves any kudos, it is for at least since 2012 doing that or trying to do that. There's a lot of holes in the way they're doing it, but they have been trying. And I think when we see big businesses trying, maybe some of those, you know, inner demons that managers have, or those microaggressions that they have, where they do have some kind of disparity that's deep down they don't even recognize, and maybe they start to have more of awareness of those. And that's when we can start leveling playing fields, because I truly think that's where we're going to be going. And it's going to be something that has to be addressed very much manager by manager, not necessarily what people are brought in at the same salary.
Okay. Beth?
So, you know, in looking in this particular case with Google, and there, this has even been the subject of lawsuits where, for example, they have different levels of software engineers. Like a level 3 is your entrance level software engineer, and level 4 is one higher. And I think in one lawsuit, there's a woman who, even though she had 4 years experience, she was brought in at a level 3, whereas men just coming out of college were brought in at level 4. So if you have that situation where women are not being brought in at the appropriate level and are therefore overqualified at the level they're at, it would then tend to reason that they are performing better than the others at that level and therefore earning those discretionary bonuses and so forth, just because they're performing better because they were put a level lower than they should have been put. And if that's the case, then no, Google should maybe have taken different measures other than the measure it took. But again, it is commendable that Google is looking at it, inviting the conversation, talking about it. I wish they would have dug a little deeper in terms of where women are placed coming in and then looking at the performance within each level.
Are any of you concerned that we're about to see, or we are seeing the beginnings of, an overcorrection in which men are about to be unfairly paid, generally speaking, less than women?
No.
It's a possibility.
So, yeah, the overcorrection is a major issue. It's also in the an issue in the Me Too movement, because now we're seeing articles and stories and reports where men aren't bringing female colleagues on business trips, or they're not mentoring them, or they're just not engaging with them because they don't want to be subject to, you know, some sort of accusation or allegation. And so, you know, many are complaining that's an overcorrection of Me Too, where women are being denied opportunities in a way that we didn't originally expect. And you do hear complaints from men that there is overcorrection going on. So whether that's a reality or not, just that mindset is something that can cause blowback in a workplace and should be addressed.
You heard that those same complaints with respect to affirmative action, but is it an overcorrection, or is it something that needs to happen in order for there to be a more fair workplace? It's a philosophical question.
But there may not be a perfect scenario. In other words, if we think of a pendulum, the pendulum and a clock swinging, and that when it's at the bottom center, that's some notion of equity, that's fairness, that's lack of discrimination in any direction. And it's been at one side for a long time. It's very hard to get that pendulum to swing back down to that perfect center without overcorrecting a little bit. And there's going to be instances where it happens. I just don't know why we all kind of drive ourselves up the wall and say, well, we should never have corrected this in the first place because look now, unintended account. Well, of course it's going to overswing at times. And before you get it back to the center, I think. But systemically, are we worried that men are all of a sudden going to be paid a whole lot less? That does not strike me as all that realistic, though I'm open to evidence, and Melanie said it's possible.
I think it's very possible, and I don't think it's possible in the sense of, particularly when people come in to the business. I think most places have got that figured out. They know that when you come in, everyone should start at X and you move up. But I think as you start to move up the ladder or move up the stairs, when you're talking about those discretionary bonuses, when you're talking about firm-wide bonuses, those are where I think the potential overcorrection can be, because there's such a sensitivity to underpayment of women that it is highly likely that managers start doing exactly what we saw at Google. Right or wrong, or for the best reasons or not, we can never tell one's motives from the outside. But they start to make contributions to women in different ways that may not always be based on better work product. Now, having said that, I don't know if you can ever fix that completely on either way. You may have a manager who prefers to work with men and bases bonuses on that. You may have a manager that prefers to work with women and their discretionary bonuses are based on that. This is something that's really a very personal inter-office, inter-section, you know, it can't be put on a global area because it just can't be defined that way.
If you can't take discretion out of payment, you're always going to have some of this gray area, right?
Right. Okay. It's an argument with merit bonuses and merit raises.
But we've made it more difficult for employers. So, first of all, we've said in some jurisdictions that people cannot ask about salary history. So in New York, we can't ask about salary history. The more information you have, the better off you are.
As an employer, in terms of
making decisions. And the theory behind that is to take the historic less payment of women out of the equation. But salary history is also a measurement, so it makes it more difficult. As part of the women's equality agenda in New York, we adopted some very, very strict New York laws about equal pay, which have not hit with the lawsuits yet, but you know, it's full employment for the three of us when they do hit, because it, just as you were talking about, it's very difficult to take the discretion out of it. And not only are there penalties, monetary penalties, but there are, it's a 300% penalty, unheard of. So if you're going to err on the side of doing something to remedy the situation, you're probably going to err on the side of making things as equal as you possibly can because of this perhaps draconian legislation. And that doesn't recognize the things that you want to recognize in the workplace. Just like Melanie was saying, you want to recognize things like innovation or productivity or things. And some of those are very difficult to put tangible numbers on.
But you're saying you were the one, I think, who said you're not all that concerned that men are going to face an overcorrection and men are going to get paid less.
I'm not. There's still a substantial gap. There's a state-by-state gap in pay. You'd have to move really, really far for men to be paid less.
Generally speaking. In the aggregate. Okay, so a couple things here. Listeners, as we go throughout the hour, we'll work on some of your feedback. And I'm particularly curious to know what our listeners think about Susan Hennessy's tweet there. The lawyer, the attorney who tweeted, "Are you a man looking to empower a woman in honor of International Women's Day? Well, go tell a female colleague exactly how much money you make. Knowledge really is power, and cultures of secrecy around compensation still harm women in particular." That's from Susan Hennessy. Yes or no?
Absolutely. And this has been a priority in enforcement with various federal and state agencies. As was mentioned earlier, you know, on a statewide level, there have been additional laws passed protecting employees' rights to share wage information. We often forget the National Labor Relations Act, which is overseen by the National Labor Relations Board, has for a long time protected employees sharing wage information, but only in recent years have we seen that actually enforced. And it's not just the union environments, it's any employer, essentially. And I've had a couple of cases, I mean, if you want to talk about what's going on locally, I've had a couple of instances where an employee shared wage information, was terminated, whether for that reason or for other reasons, went and reported to the National Labor Relations Board in Buffalo, and they were all over it immediately. So
that wouldn't have been the case in the past?
Well, it wasn't really enforced in the past. You know, it was a traditional thing. You would even see it in employee handbooks, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. You know, what you get paid is confidential. You'll be disciplined if you tell anybody. And then the plaintiff's lawyers were like, wait a minute, there's this law that was passed, you know, like 100 years ago. And so you started seeing these lawsuits. And the agency, the board, woke up on this issue and started enforcing it. And then we started realizing that this secrecy was promoting a lot of inequality in the workforce. And so additional laws started getting passed. Employees have to be able to share this. A lot of businesses haven't received the memo on that yet, unfortunately. And so they still prohibit it, whether they do it overtly or just, you know,
are they allowed to prohibit it? Are they allowed to?
No.
Okay, they can't, because there's a couple things here. I'm going to stay on this thread, and I know all of our guests are going to want to weigh in on this. But Beth, here's a response from a listener named Ryan who said, it's actually illegal for most employers to take action against employees for discussing pay. It's a policy a lot of companies like to have, knowing full well they can't enforce it. In other words, companies, Ryan is saying, like to say you can't talk about pay, but they know they can't enforce it, but it still encourages secrecy. It does sound like that's correct.
That is correct.
Okay. Robert writes on Twitter, says, never tell a coworker how much you earn, male or female. All that does is breed envy and conflict. Also, never ask a coworker how much they earn. It's rude and it's none of your business.
That's the culture that's promoted in a lot of workplaces.
Do you have a problem with that?
Well, it's not legal. It's not legal. And, you know, I think transparency should be the goal overall, both at the among the employees and at the business level.
Because the point that I think people get stuck on is they may say, okay, the law says X. Companies can't prohibit you from talking. In reality, if you do, they're going to find a way to get rid of you. Yes or no?
That happens, yes.
It does happen.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And that's a problem.
It is.
It's not supposed to be legal.
Evan, can I ask Beth a question?
Sure.
Beth, do you think that you should publish the salaries or the compensation of all of the staff at your law firm to each other?
Do I think we should? Well, we're pretty, we're a relatively small firm, and if anybody asks a question, we share it, and
no,
people
but I mean,
know.
Should you regularly do that?
What do you mean?
Like publish it publicly? Like in
no,
some
no,
so,
no,
or
no, to each other.
Internally?
Okay. To each other. Each year?
Well, our attorneys are paid on a lockstep, so you make a certain amount based on the years out of law school, and our, you know, internally, the attorneys know what bonuses you can earn, and most of that is on an objective basis. So,
yeah, but that's not, you know, my question is, should all of the staff see what all of the staff is making?
I don't know what you mean by that. It's not something that...
So that's the essence of transparency.
What do you do at your firm?
Nobody sees. I mean, I know because I run
design?
The Rochester office.
Yeah.
So I know what people are making.
Right.
And other people can ask other people and get the information, but it's not published in any form. And that's so publishing it to everybody in the law firm or in the business would really be the essence of transparency.
Yes.
And to some extent, I agree with the person who tweeted that it does breed envy. You don't know what went into the considerations, things of the sort. But the employer should absolutely know who is making what and whether there's any distinctions among gender or other protected categories. The biggest issue, I think, is that for too long we've just been slack about it, and we haven't compared what people were making. Basically, if people would come in and they would portray themselves as being extremely valuable, then they would get a better salary. And we haven't looked at these issues. Now we're starting to look at the issues, and that's how you become fair.
This implies, though, that an employer... that employers just are sort of ignorant about who's making what within their own companies, and if you would just give them that information, they'd fix it.
I don't believe that many employers have conducted salary studies like Google, and that's I represent many employers, and they conduct salary studies when they have to. Not as a regular course of their business, and I think it's an important thing to do.
speaking, I'm going to take the other side of the coin, being an employer concept. I don't think an employer wants to spend the money, whether right or wrong. Right. I think they see it as an expense that they can either put into A, their employees' pockets, B, into something else, or C, their own pockets. I think any employer hearing this conversation should be trembling at the knees with the thought of, you know, ultimate transparency of showing, you know, their staff everybody else's salary. I'm sitting here hearing Beth and Sharon talk about it.
I'm not saying that there should be transparency, and I don't think there is transparency. And I think even those of us who advocate transparency would not go so far as to publish among all of the employees at the workplace what everybody's earning.
And I think that even goes with, you know, I sit here and I think about our staff is primary female, so we don't have a gender equality. We kind of hit the age range pretty far. But if that was to be publicized, and I think every employer thinks this to some degree, if you just look at your in-office staff, what that could create, even if the dollar signs aren't that different between different employees for whatever reason, it can get really nasty really quick. Having said that, I think when we're looking at the big businesses, the Googles, the Microsofts, you know, not the ones that are 50 and under, where it's pretty easy to look around the room and see, you know, what sex do you employ? What demographics are you employing? You know, with or without this huge test to be done. I think those big environments are where we need to be looking at and saying, okay, you know, you've got, you know, how many thousands of employees and what are you doing and how are you making that even? And then that trickles down because a lot of those employees leave and start their own businesses, particularly in tech industries. And those are the places where you can see that equality can continue. When you feel like you've been treated fair and you go and start your own business or you go somewhere else, I think you want to keep that. It's no longer the me against them.
Beth, do you find yourself more pro-transparency than the other guests here, do you think?
Well, I guess it's how you define transparency, right?
Okay.
I don't define transparency solely by publishing my numbers to everybody. I define transparency by having that conversation and encouraging and welcoming that conversation. So, you know, at the Googles of the world, where you have a very structured workforce, you have very defined different levels of employees, very developed compensation structures and so forth, and the war chest, so to speak, to conduct these things. Yes, you should do it because you're under scrutiny. You have the money. You know, here in New York State, a lot of businesses, they're, you know, 50 or under. They just don't have the resources to do that. That doesn't mean you can't look at it. It might not be a full scale, you know, audit like what Google did. But, you know, look at your different positions where you don't pay a certain amount where there's, you know, no discretion whatsoever. If you do take into account years of experience, education, et cetera, you know, you need to document why you're arriving at one figure versus arriving at a different figure for a different employee. And I'm not afraid to have that conversation if one employee is making less than the other as to why that is and how they themselves can get up to the level that they want to be at. I don't think it has to be nasty.
Okay. Diane writes to us and says, what's the point for a woman to ask male coworkers how much they make? Then women would go to managers, ask for more. Managers would just find reasons why the man who makes more should continue to make more. Discretionary issues, excuses. What are the realistic ways to use that information productively?
That's Section 194 of the New York State labor law, which is the pay equity provision that I was just talking about, that carries with it the 300% penalty. So if you find out, and I represent employers, so I am scared of the day that this happens. But if Diane, I think was her name,
Diane,
went to the employer, found out that this was the case, then there's a potential claim under the labor law. Now, there may be reasons for the differential that are permitted reasons under the law. I don't know that. But again, unless you have the information, you really can't ascertain what's fair and what isn't fair.
Okay. Melanie, what would you say to Diane?
I would say if I was Diane, I would be A, upset, naturally. But B, I would want to sit down before I made any other movements and make a real objective list of why Has this person been at the company longer? They have more experience. I mean, take a step back before you take two steps forward, because there's nothing like taking two steps forward, coming to like Beth or me or someone else that represents plaintiffs and say, oh, well, here's the reasons they have and they're legitimate reasons. Sit back, look at it. If you're really talking about an apple and an apple, not an apple and a watermelon, then you know what? That's what you need to do. And if you don't want to go to management and make the case there, then go outside.
Okay. Beth?
I would definitely, I'm a big proponent in having the discussion, and I don't think it has to be a negative discussion. You know, for example, you know, with physicians, oftentimes I'll see physicians that are in a male-dominated area, for example, surgeons, and they're seeing that they're making less than their male colleagues. And so, you know, it's a physician's compensation structure is very difficult. So what you might assign to being female might be due to other reasons, or maybe not. But to engage, whether you, you know, get an attorney to help you or you do it on your own, to really dig deep as to why your compensation is one way versus the male colleagues that are the other way. And, you know, if ultimately, you know, you have to go down the path of being litigious, you know, so be it. But I think by and large, a lot of these disputes can be resolved amicably.
Okay. Yeah, I think that that's what all of our guests at various points have kind of indicated, that they're here when needed, but they do believe that a lot of these disputes can get resolved before it gets litigious. Fair?
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Communication's huge.
And information.
So I have more questions from listeners, and when we come back after our only break here, we're gonna tackle the question raised so often when we talk about pay equity, when we talk about whether men and women are making the same or different structures in different roles or the same jobs. So often what you hear is what the pop psychologist Jordan Peterson said, which is that, okay, there's a gender gap, but it's not because of gender. He says he thinks, Peterson said recently that, in his words, quote, radical feminists say the prejudice against women accounts for most of the pay gap, and the reality is that prejudice accounts for a very little percentage of the pay gap. Women tend to choose careers that pay less than men. That's what they want, and there's nothing wrong with that, but let's not turn that into a crisis. He also said women have a much higher score on a personality trait that psychologists call agreeableness, which leads to less vigorous negotiating. And he said, again, let's not turn that into a crisis when it's just factual. So we'll get our guests to respond to those points and continue the discussion with Sharon Stiller, a partner and director of the employment law practice at Abrams Fensterman, Melanie Wolk, a partner at Trivette Cristo, Elizabeth Cordello, chair of the employment law practice at Polano & Faro. We're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the team behind the hugely popular show PBS Nature is in Rochester here at WXXI. They have an event, a screening tonight at the Little Theater that is sadly already sold out. But you can see just how magma hot the series is. We're going to talk all about their goals, the mission, how the show comes together next hour. Welcome back to Connections. And as we continue, it occurs to me, I didn't even mention the phone number. I've got some emails to share with our guests. But if you want to call the program as we talk about pay equity or not and what to do in certain situations, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. All right, let's go around the table. And Sharon, I'll start with you. So Jordan Peterson says, women score higher on a factor called agreeableness. That leads to lower salaries because of negotiation. They push less for promotion. It's just a fact. It demonstrates why men are promoted more often and make more money. He says radical feminists say prejudice against women accounts for most of the pay gap, and the reality is there is a pay gap, and prejudice accounts for a much smaller percentage of it, that women also tend to choose careers that pay less than men. That's what they want, and we shouldn't turn that into a crisis. Those are generalizations, but that's where he's coming from. What do you say to that, Sharon?
They are generalizations, and I don't know what data, if any, they're based upon, but I do know that being more agreeable, for example, is not going to be a defense to a lawsuit or a 300% penalty if you pay people differently because of gender.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. There are extreme financial reasons to make sure you're doing it right.
Melanie.
I don't think I can say my response on air. I find that incredibly offensive. You've got, you know, three women here who practice in litigation. It is probably the...
Nobody would call us agreeable.
Including my husband most of the time. They wouldn't call us agreeable. They wouldn't call us people that would back down for a fight. And we clearly haven't picked a type of law to practice that is not rewarding us financially. You know, we work very hard for every dollar we earn and sometimes take a lot of pounding in the meantime, just as any man would. So to hear that is really kind of tough for people that are sitting in the room. That isn't to say there aren't some women who choose different aspects of law or different aspects of business for many different reasons. Maybe some as he describes, but some may be more so they can spend more time with their children or more time with their elderly parents, or they want to work 40 hours a week and not 80 hours a week. And there are men that make those exact same choices.
And so, it's also what came first, the chicken or the egg? Were they always low-paying jobs, or are they low-paying jobs because they're primarily occupied by women?
Yeah, and that's, you hear it, and it's very, very easy, I think, for anyone to characterize in vagueness why people do or choose certain things. You know, the problem really comes down to, if you have a male and a female performing the same job and performing it as well, why aren't they getting paid the same? Period.
Okay, Beth?
Well, you know, that thought that, you know, women may not negotiate as hard as a male does, or an employer may not value the female candidate as much as the male candidate, is the exact reason why we're seeing a wave of legislation regarding inquiring into salary history, regarding sharing of wages, and all of the different things in an attempt to remedy that, because oftentimes you see women get lowballed, so to speak, entering their career, and then as they advance to other businesses, they're asked about their previous salary, and the employer's like, oh, sweet, we can offer her 20 grand less than we would have offered, you know, Jim over there. So that's sort of, it's a complicated thing. It's true, but in some respects, but not in the reason why you would think. I don't think women necessarily want lesser paying jobs or less demanding careers. Some aspects may be that that's where they're encouraged to go. That's how they're socialized. You know, there's a lot that goes into that. And it's, you know, it's difficult to address. It's sometimes difficult to talk about. And I think legislators and various groups are doing their best to address it. There's no one perfect answer, though.
All right, Robert in Fairport on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. There's a huge difference in fatality rates for many occupations that tend to be very weighted heavily toward men. If you're looking at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, per 100,000 workers, the average fatality rate's about 3.4. Loggers, 97% male, you got a fatality rate of 133 per 100,000 workers. The same for things like fishermen, aircraft pilots, roofers, etc. It just seems that people that go into these occupations are going to be making more money because they're risky. They're risky occupations, and the death rates are much higher for people in many of these jobs.
All right, Robert, thank you. Thoughts on that? From our guests. Beth, I'll start with you.
I'm not sure what the question is. Are men less careful and that's why they're suffering more fatalities?
I think what he is saying is similar to what Jordan Peterson's saying, is that men tend to choose those kinds of jobs that are more dangerous, and they also pay more because they are higher risk, that women just don't want those jobs, and we shouldn't try to force pay equity into society if women don't want to do those jobs.
I disagree. I think those jobs that he listed are predominantly male. And I think women aren't necessarily encouraged to go apply for those jobs. And of the women that do, if there are equally qualified male candidates, the oftentimes male hiring manager would be, whether, you know, it may not even be a conscious decision, just subconsciously they feel better. Maybe they have some protective attitude towards women or whatever the case may be, or maybe they view the male as stronger. They'll go ahead and hire the male. So there's a lot of reasons behind why that is, but I don't think it's because women prefer to make less money. Women like to make money just like anybody else.
Okay, Melanie?
I would agree. If there's a woman doing the same job as a male, logging, firefighter, roofer, it's the same pay. That's just the reality.
Robert's just saying, though, that there's fewer women who are going to want to do that job. That's all he's saying there.
Who says? Yeah, it's like people saying that there were fewer people who wanted to be police officers. Well, you know, when I started practicing law eons ago, and I was in the DA's office, there were few women, but not because people didn't want to be police officers. Now, or let's use law as an example. When I went to law school, there were, I believe, 20 women in my class of 200. Now it's predominantly 50%. Is that, and you look at books written earlier about women going into law and written primarily by men, saying women don't want to go into law. They're not suitable to going into law, things of the sort.
Agreeable.
Right. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? So we're not saying that risky jobs people should not be compensated well for risky jobs. Everybody should.
This is where I actually think nuance gets lost here. And before we move to another part of the conversation, I do want to put a fine point on this, because as someone who then spends my afternoon kind of digesting what listeners thought, sometimes this point gets made that our guests are making, and it becomes a one or the other thing. And here's what I think is important here. Peterson often says, well, the problem is you don't want equality of opportunity. You want to force equality of outcome. Equality of outcome, so 50% of employees in all industries must be men and women, and you will not stop until that's the case. And so someone might hear Sharon Stiller say, who says that fewer women want to be lawyers or police officers? Are we socializing that, or is that actually a genetic difference? And somebody might say, oh, so you want to force equality of outcome. What I actually hear is something much more nuanced, which is that no one is saying we need to force 50% into some fields. And there probably will be some fields where more women want to do it, and there's probably going to be some fields where more men want to do it. But probably not 97 and 3%. Probably not zero lawyers. Probably not zero police officers. Probably not zero nurses or teachers. And the reality is that it may be in the 60s or in the 50s, you know, 55-45, not 85-15, but we socialize in a certain direction that almost eliminates the very possibility, from the shows kids watch at the age of 3 all the way on up. And by the time people are adults, they're making decisions that have been socialized. So there's a genetic component, but there's also a socializing component. And it's not trying to force equality of outcome, but it's recognizing the complexity. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think one great example of that is, you know, 20, 30 years ago, a male nurse was laughable. Oh my God, he's a guy who's a nurse. And now it's perfectly socially acceptable, and you see a ton more males in the nursing profession. So I think it's just constantly having the conversation and looking at it closely when it's so out of balance. I agree with you. You know, we shouldn't try, it's silly to try to force a 50-50 thing, but when it's 3% versus 97%, I think that begs the question why.
Okay.
And to have the discussion about it.
Okay.
I think we're all saying that everybody should have equality of opportunity. It's not numbers, it's equality of opportunity and fair pay. I don't hear any of us saying anything different, and I'm not sure that the people you cite are saying anything different. They're just attributing, they're recognizing that there's a problem, but attributing it to different things.
You want to add to that, Melanie?
I agree completely. I don't think anyone's going to say...
Oh, but Melanie, you're so agreeable.
I know. I don't think anyone's trying to say that we need 50% male, female, you know, lumberjacks. I don't think anyone is going that far. It is probably not a realistic possibility. But hey, in 50 years, you never know, because who would have said, you know, 50, 60 years ago, we would have the amount of male teachers we have now, or male nurses, or even male nannies that are starting to come into play now that we didn't have. And I don't know what the future holds, but I think we're all trying to say is we want the possibility to be there and to be socially acceptable.
All right. To the phones we go, Scott and Henrietta. Next, go ahead, Scott.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to respond to a comment that one of your guests made regarding the lack of data that's presented in the quotes that you gave from Peterson there. And it's really troubling, you know, to listen to those things. And Peterson says, you know, a very small percentage can be associated with you know, some of the
prejudice
that he provides.
Yeah.
While not prejudice, thank you. While not actually specifying what that percentage is or what studies provided that information. And the problems with his statements are that they're purely rhetorical statements that aren't really backed by anything. And as you talk through saying, you know, women are more agreeable than men, so they'll take lower salaries. While I'm not an expert on these by any stretch, you know, it completely ignores the fact that you know, in certain fields, the pay is in fact higher. But if you're comparing apples to apples and you say, you know, teachers of the same education level and of the same subject or whatever the, you know, occupation is, that's where you're doing your real studies. And you can show, you know, that it comes from prejudice. It comes from this source. It comes from that source. But somebody as disingenuous as I think Peterson is not going to tell you any of that. He's just going to show his misogyny and, you know, hang it on a rhetorical flourish. And that's all I have.
Scott, thank you. I appreciate the phone call. And, you know, so on the subject of what we sort of do and don't know and what we can actually pin on data and try to more snugly line it up, because Scott's pointing out, you know, some of this is more just rhetorical arguments, not less on data. Mackenzie is emailing saying, why don't we just rely on data? Why do we have any discretion in hiring? Why shouldn't one position pay one salary no matter who gets it, men or women? Then there's no more questions to be asked, no negotiating. That comes up a lot. And we have seen some companies announce, essentially, we're taking, I think the CEO of Reddit did that several years ago, we're taking negotiating out, this position pays X to whoever gets it. And that's what Mackenzie's saying. Is that wise?
It's certainly one way to go about it.
And to some extent, if you can't have salary history, you have to do something like that, at least for entry level.
Okay.
That's how we buy cars now. I mean, it's the whole no negotiation concept. They did it to make it, you know, originally more available to women. You know, the women didn't like to buy cars because they felt like they were always getting taken advantage of and not negotiating. And here's the deal. They do it now. Why can't we do it in the rest of the business world? Why not almost have blind interviews? You know, you got to make sure someone's personality fits in with your office.
They do that in industries like the Philharmonic.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, they can hear your voice. But, I mean, here's the deal. Why? If somebody can do the job and the personality fits in with your business, does it matter if they're male or female? It shouldn't.
All right. So Teresa writes and says, Evan, I'm a fully recovered HR manager. I worked part-time at a small manufacturing company. I regularly reviewed rates of pay and pointed out to the mostly male managers discrepancies between the male and female employees, but they always had some excuse or an explanation and nothing changed. It was frustrating and I knew it was wrong, but there was little I could do except to keep bringing it up, which I did. When it came time for me to move on because the demands of the job exceeded the amount of time I had available to devote to it, I was replaced by a man who was then paid 30% more than what I had been paid. 30%. I knew this because I helped hire and train him. That was 8 years ago, and to this day, it's beyond frustrating. It is infuriating. That is from Teresa. Also, Jill writes to us and says, regarding women don't want to be lawyers or doctors or CEOs, beware of listening to mansplaining. Okay?
You have some really erudite followers. They're great.
Yep. Tim writes to us and says, I'm just wondering about the cost of health care and benefits that women receive compared to men. Not necessarily saying that women cost more on that end, but just wondering how the guests would approach that realm of the discussion. Maybe that is completely irrelevant, but do think that some employers would consider that aspect when hiring men versus women, males versus females. I don't know. What do we think?
I never thought of it. I don't think it would even cross my mind.
The cost of health care and benefits women receive compared to men?
I don't think you can take that into consideration. I mean, that's discriminatory, and it would be the same thing as are you permitted to hire somebody who is young versus somebody who's old because of those issues?
Evan, in our business, it's if you're a single, you pay X. If you're a two, you pay Y. And if you're a family, you pay out the wazoo.
And if you're a business that's concerned about it, you just contribute, aside from some of the Affordable Care requirements, you contribute X amount for benefits, and that's it. There are ways to avoid issues with it.
Yeah, and it's evenly between everyone. It doesn't go more male or female. So I don't even know how we would I'm not sure how we would discriminate through healthcare.
Okay. Well, I think they used to use mortality tables for on some of the issues, but you really can't.
Okay, so let me just kind of in our last minute just ask for what I'm taking away from this discussion is this is so complex, and as long as there is negotiating and as long as there is discretion, it will always be complex. will always keep our guests here employed. And it's a good field for men and women to go into, apparently, employment law. But it does seem that the efforts have been made to at least remove some of the lack of knowledge of bias to the extent that we can identify bias and at least help redress some of that. Is that fair, Beth? Are we moving in a direction that is more equitable, even if we're never going to have a perfect system, do you think?
I think so, and I hope so, yes. And as far as, you know, doing a totally objective compensation structure versus subjective, I don't necessarily recommend it's easier in some respects to achieve equity with a totally objective compensation structure, but I don't recommend it for all businesses, and I think it makes sense for a lot of businesses to have a subjective compensation structure to maintain their competitiveness. And you just have to document and review constantly to make sure it's equitable across your workforce.
Yeah, so to the extent that you've got the resources or at least the time to try to do it internally, understanding what's going on in your own companies is a good idea, at the top level especially.
Very important.
Okay, and if you've got questions or if you feel like you're in a position where you cannot get an answer or fairness, well, some of our guests know that you might call them. But it's interesting that they all said, they think that most cases, discussion dialogue can produce better outcomes if you can try it that way. Elizabeth Cordella from Polano and Farrow, Melanie Wolk from Trivette Cristo, Sharon Stiller from Abrams Fensterman. Thanks to all of you. And I suspect we'll talk again soon on related subjects.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Short break. More connections coming up.